Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of Who We Are, where we uncover the stories, struggles, and triumphs that shape us as human beings. Today, I am very honored to sit down with someone who has not only entertained generations, but has also redefined what it means to live with authenticity. Gurmit Singh is a name that's synonymous with humor, talent, and creativity. But beyond the laughter and the larger-than-life persona really lies a man with a remarkable story. From his iconic role as Phatrukang to his deeply personal journey as a father, husband, and individual, Gurmit has navigated the highs and lows of life with a rare blend of courage and grace. In this conversation, we're going to go beyond the public persona to also explore deeper into the heart of Gurmit and who he truly is, the lessons he has learned, the challenges he has faced, and the wisdom he's gained along the way. Gurmit, welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm Gurmit, the Singh. And you know me as Phatrukang, of course. Most people know me as that. Mm. But there's some people who don't know who I am, you know. Because they will say like, oh, you're Gurmit Singh. So you act as what? I said Phatrukang. Huh? Can I be what? Your hair straight. You have no mole.
No.
So I have to then. They can't tell, which is great, because it'd be, I think I'll be quite sad. Like, people say, you look exactly like him. Then what's all that makeup for?
But and all the wig and everything. Yeah.
So I have to do a demo. I have to say, hello, I'm Phatrukang. I'm best in Singapore. Xavier and some say, what up? Don't pray.
You have to convince them.
Then they go, oh, it's you. I say, yes, it's me. Yeah.
Well, you know, before we go into a little bit more about your journey, I also wanted to ask you have really brought so much laughter to generations over the last few decades. What is something that for yourself, you know, still makes you laugh to today, even after you've heard it many times? Is there something that makes you laugh all the time?
Anything that slapstick makes me laugh.
When
I first got into this scene, right, I was actually told by management of the TV station, you know, Gurmit, you're very approachable, people like you and all that, but your jokes are very corny. Can you make it more intelligent?
So bring us back to the beginning of your career, you know, right, when you first joined the entertainment industry. What was it like? And did you ever imagine, Gurmit, that your work would make such a profound impact or have such a profound impact on culture?
Well, I wouldn't go so far to say that, but thank you for putting me up there. But when I first auditioned, it was because somebody who knows somebody who saw me in Hopa Villa. So,
Which year was this? This was
1990. Yeah. And Hopa Villa was open. It was like a mini Disneyland. And we had many shows. And I was involved in one of those shows where it was at the amphitheater, musical and all that. But it was also interactive. So I played a baddie who goes around to the audience and brings them up and asks them, where is this? I want to talk to them and, you know, harass them. And, you know, and every time somebody comes up, it's a new banter because
yes,
I don't know who you are.
And you don't know what
to expect. We're tourists.
Yeah.
So you know, I don't know what they're saying sometimes. Yeah. But after one particular show, an SBC producer walked by and said, you know, we watch your show and you're very fast on your feet. Mm. You'll be good on a live TV show. And I said, oh, okay, thank you. And that was it. I didn't think anything about it.
Okay.
But 4 years later, I get a call and they said, hey, come in for an audition. There's a live show.
Mm.
I said, that producer really remembered me. Oh, kudos. Went there. And they did a test where they asked, I couldn't even enter MediaCorp yet, or back then SBC.
Yeah.
It was just a taxi stand. And there was a tripod camera. And then I sat at the taxi stand and I said, okay, talk about yourself for 30 seconds. Okay, done. And now pretend to interview somebody on your right who is a superstar from overseas, come to Singapore, who's going to do a concert and interview them. I said, okay. I've never done this before, right? So I just make it up as I go along.
Yeah.
Then they say, okay, we'll let you know. We'll let you know is the worst line you want to hear as an entertainer, right? We'll let you know. Which is like
anyone.
Yeah.
Like a job interview
let you know. But then sometime later, they call me and say, okay, come in for screen test, which means I've passed the first hurdle now. Now I'm going to the studio with the actual props set and everything.
Mm.
When I got there, I got very disappointed because there were others there who were beautiful women, amazingly good-looking men, and you know the women had long wavy hair. There was no wind, but their hair was waving still. I said, "There's no way I'll get this job, lah. These guys are so good-looking, muscular, taller than me. Fine, I'll just do it anyway." And then was done. Went home, and then sometime later they call me and say, "Hey, you got the job." I said, "What? Oh, really? Me? I mean, like, got the job. Yeah, okay. So who's the female co-host? No one, just you. So it's both an honor and also a stab in my heart because it's a live show. That means I have to take now 100% of the script. I can't share that load with anybody
exactly.
else.
Exactly. And I've the airtime is all yours.
All mine. And I've never done TV before.
Wow.
So there was a huge, steep learning curve. Every Tuesday night when the show was on, I had diarrhea because I was so anxious.
I can't imagine.
Right.
It must have felt so intimidating to you.
Very intimidating. And only 3 months later, the executive producer, who's an Australian, came to me and said, Gurmit, you have been confirmed. I said, what? What do you mean by confirmed? Actually, you were on probation.
What? And you did not even know.
I didn't know. Yeah. I said, why didn't you tell me? He said, if I told you, would it make you more nervous? I said, that's true.
Wow.
So he had been fighting for me because management was still unhappy that I wasn't the Ken and the Barbie kind of look. Mm. I wasn't good looking enough. I wasn't tall enough. I wasn't muscular enough. Mm. But this Australian producer said, but he has the gift of gab.
Yeah.
We need that for a live show. Then you've proven to them that you can hold a show. And I said, okay, thanks.
Was there a pivotal moment in your career, in the early part of your journey, that changed the way you saw yourself as a person, not just as an artist or entertainer?
As a person, I like to say that I never changed. I have friends who told me that they are happy to report that I haven't changed yet. And I love that because I've seen
you've
many...
You've stayed true to yourself, yeah.
Kinda, yeah. Because I've seen many who come in, you know, all greenhorn and like Gurmit Singh, oh, brother, please help me, teach me, I want to learn. And I say, okay, yeah, sure. Mm. But then within 6 months, they become this diva. Mm. They're not even courteous to the makeup artist, the wardrobe, the ADs and all that. They're just like, hey, give me, come here. And this sort of thing. I was like, So I told myself, if I ever get that stage, I'm going to kick myself out of the industry.
I think it's easier said than done because especially when you get all the exposure, all the fame and the public, you know, like
it's
recognition.
It's very egocentric, this industry, right?
So how do you balance, you know, navigating that and also staying true to your core values?
I remember my son, when he was about 8 years old, he told me, Dad, you know, people think you're a superstar, but to me, he's just a dad. I was like, don't come back.
It keep you grounded.
Keep me grounded. So family keeps me grounded. Mm. You know, going to church keeps me grounded. Yeah. My inferiority complex keeps me grounded too, I think. For the longest time, I struggled with a lot of things on air and off air about not being good enough in all aspects. Not tall enough, not handsome enough, not clever enough, not everything enough. And I remember one time when I was in school and then there was this girl who waved at me and I'm like, and she's pretty, right? So I'm like, hey. And then she's like, how are you? I said, I'm fine. Like, then she did something to the show. I was like, what? I don't understand. And then I turned around and she had been talking to this guy behind me all this time. I felt like I wanted to go to hell because it was so embarrassing. And for the longest time, I was very challenged by this inferiority complex. I remember doing Miss Singapore Universe. And, you know, beautiful girls and all that. And on the first season, when I hosted it, you know, I'm talking to the girls, make them feel at ease, talking to the judges, talking to the people at home and the studio and all that, you know, doing my thing. But at the same time, my voice was saying, who the hell are you to stand here next to this beautiful girl? She must be waiting to kill herself or kill you. And you are so smelly, you're so ugly, you're so... And this would go on while I'm talking to you, right? And it was difficult. So I held it as much as I could. And then go to the car and then cry.
No.
And feel them lousy and like, oh my God, I was so bad.
Back then, you already had a few years under your belt.
Yes, I did. You know, and that's why they trusted me with that show. Because they said, you know, you live show, when we go to live, you can handle it, right? Second year, it got worse. You know, the voice was louder and angrier. So after the second show, I went to management and said, I cannot do this. Why? Because this is what's happening. I told them the truth. I said, I can't. They said, what? You look very comfortable. I said, yeah, that's my job. You pay me to do. But I telling you now, I can't do this anymore. I get very, very depressed and demoralized after that. Not to say that if I'm around ugly people, I'm okay. No, because if I'm around ugly people, if you're taller than me, I say, oh shit, I'm not tall enough.
You will always find something.
My voice will always find something that you cannot do. So I don't watch my own shows. PCK, I've only watched 2 episodes because I wanted to see when they transferred to Netflix, what was the episode. And I was happy that that it still stands the test of time, but I was still critical of myself. I could have done better. You know? But I think at the end of the day, I think that's how it is. Inferiority complex has kept me grounded. It hasn't allowed me to say, yo, what's up? I'm the best comedian in Singapore. I can't do that because my voice inside would say, you go to hell.
Over the years, have you got better at coping with that? Or at least like diminishing the voice slightly?
Yes. One aspect of it was when I used to call myself uglier than the Hunchback of Notre Dame, uglier than the Elephant Man. I look at Elephant Man and I think, what a good looking guy. And I look at myself.
And genuinely, yeah. you felt that?
Yeah. Then one day, this other voice spoke to me and said, you know, if you say that, aren't you saying then your mother and father are really ugly? And I'm like, oh my God. Because my mother and father are really beautiful inside and outside people. Mm. So I said, yeah, in a way, that's insulting my family, my parents. So I stopped doing that. I stopped saying that I'm uglier than Elephant Man. I say, okay, that my mom and dad are good looking. So they have produced something nice. You know, even when I do Pua Chu Kang, right? People think it's larger than life, just goof around and have a... It's a very serious character too, in the sense that I have to think in English, change to Singlish, make it funny, and then hope the joke lands, right? So, yeah. And when you have...
Yeah.
When the character has reached that level of fame, you are required to deliver every time, you know? Even as myself now, as Gurmit Singh, when I step out of my house or my motorbike or my car, people expect me to behave in a certain way. I was in a hawker center and I was just eating my char kway teow. And the guy came to me and said, hey, Gurmit, what's wrong with you? I said, what do you mean? Why are you so sad? No, I'm not sad. I just eating my char kway teow. Okay lah, smart a bit lah. Why like that? smart a bit lah. No need to be so serious lah. Then he walked off. Then I'm like, oh.
You know your Miss Singapore Universe incident.
Yeah.
Looking back now, did you feel like you should have tried harder to overcome it for such a great opportunity to continue having the opportunity to host Miss Singapore Universe versus do you see it as giving up?
I gave up on Miss Singapore, but I think I had to because if I didn't, can you imagine me breaking down on TV live and then, you know, making a mess of everything?
I love that. In that moment when you chose to give up, what did you choose? Your sanity over fame?
Yeah, I guess.
Fame,
right?
Right?
Yeah.
And that's beautiful because I can imagine someone in your shoes would maybe just dong, and you know, just like
I already dong already. I ding dong, ding dong already. I ding dong already. Cannot already.
But to give up such to anyone, it's a shining opportunity.
Yeah,
to give that up, it must have you must have battled a lot inside.
No, but here's the thing: I never look back and say, "Ah, there goes my career," because I was always given opportunity after opportunity after. I mean, look at my track record. I've done so many shows, so many genres that people come to me and say, we're jealous of you. How do you have so much opportunity? Or like, somebody pointed out that, you know, because I did SARS, I did vaccination, I did COVID, all that. Someone put a meme and said that PCK, the world's only pandemic rapper.
It's true. Right? You come out during...
And then there's a pandemic, I put on my wig
and
come out.
When the government needed to reach like all different generations, he pulled you out.
And what an honour that is.
It if is you look an honour, you're right.
Because they could have used a real person, but they didn't. They used PCK. And to think that from a fictional character, it's become so real, so homely that people accept from different backgrounds, financial background, educational background, language.
You know,
it just transcends everything. Yeah.
And in 2014, you stepped away from the limelight at the peak of your career.
Yeah.
What led to that and what was it like?
Well, you know, all my life, I've enjoyed the career because it's given me so much more than I wished for as a kid.
And you spent 20 years.
I was 20 years in there. I drove a Lamborghini. I lived in a big house and all. But at the same time, the family side of Gurmit Singh was very sad because I hardly had time at home. And I kept telling myself...
You had three kids. Yeah.
Back then, I only had two. Third one came in 2013. And I always told myself, it's okay, you know, be a man. You're providing for the family. You know, stop whining and just do the job. But when I was a kid, my father was a watchman and he did two jobs a day. You know, daytime watchman, nighttime watchman. And I remember praying to God saying that, you know, no offense against watchmen. It's a, you know... It's an honest to God job, right? Honest to goodness job. But I don't want to have the same kind of job, same kind of life. I want to be there for my family.
Right.
And I fell into the same trap. I was doing this exact same thing, except it's a bigger job, better paying job. So 5 years before I retired, I was thinking of what can I do to get out of this place. I was talking to my wife, we would have this conversation, and I said, if I step out, my fear was that then the TV station will say, okay, he's no more with us, don't have to use him. Then I do what? Because this is the only thing I know. I told myself, okay, maybe I join McDonald's because I love the Filet-O-Fish and I become the manager there. And that'd be, but I won't be able to provide the lifestyle that my family had been used to for the 20 years. And I felt that as a failure, as a man, as a provider, as a husband, as a father. And we kept going back and forth, what to do. My wife, you know, credit to her, she said, both of us came from a poor family, HDB, one-room flat. She said, if we need to go back there, we go back there. I'm not scared. So come 2013, my latest is born. And I start thinking, you know, I don't want them to go through this little one to go through the same thing as the first two, right? So
what was the same thing that the kids went through? Could you talk us through that? Because it's not just a 9-to-5 Monday to Friday job.
No, it's every day, every time, any hour job. We don't even have a union to fight for us to say that he's been working for 22 hours straight. Can you stop him? No, there's no such thing. There's no law. So I didn't want the
And you
third
never got
one.
To spend New Year's Eve with them.
Yes,
you
for
missed
20
all
years.
Their all milestones. Their
milestones. It was hard. I remember one time when I picked up my eldest when she was in primary one and I went to a school to pick her up. I was surrounded by parents, helpers, students asking for an autograph. And I felt this tough. Then I looked down and my daughter said, Papa, can we go home? I said, yeah, okay, let's go home, let's go. So this is the welcome to Gurmit's world, you know. I'm carrying my baby or I'm carrying my child and all that. Someone comes and say, hey, take a picture. You know, there's no privacy whatsoever, which is fine for me because I chose this career.
Yeah.
But then my family also gets sucked into it, which is not fair for them, you know. So I didn't want my third one to go through the same thing. Of course, the first two, when they grew up, they understood what father was doing and how this is the way it is, right? They have to just take it with it. And we had, as a family, we had this code. If you're eating somewhere and someone comes in and asks nicely to take a picture, we'll say yes. But no picture of the family, only me.
Right.
I always relent anyway because I always believe that they, the audience, are my paymasters. They are the one who perpetuate my career.
Yeah.
Because of their demand, here I am.
Yeah.
They don't demand me.
They want to see more of you and therefore you had all the jobs. But how did it feel to walk away from something so familiar and so successful into... Literally, it's not like you know what's in it for you next. You literally stepped into the unknown.
Oh, I was with trepidation, you know, I stepped away and I said, okay, here we go. Let's see what happens now, what life deals me. And I got to say this, I got to share this story. 2015 January, after I've become a freelancer officially, right, I got an email from Mediacorp, which was great because it told me that, you know, there's this project, we'd like you to be on it and these are the details, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the email, there was this one line, which I've never seen in my 20 years with them. And their line was, are you available? Because all this time has been instructional. Go there, do this. They knew my private calendar as well.
They owned
me, basically. Yeah.
Right. And so now you finally...
Yeah. And I was like, wow, so I can say no? So I thought, I look at the calendar, I look at the dates. Actually, I was available, but I thought, you know what? Let me try. So I email and say, hey, thanks for the email, blah, blah, blah. However, the dates clash and I'm unavailable. So sorry. And I sent, right? As soon as I sent, I held onto my chair because I was slowly seeing the room spin. I was going to pass out. My wife came in and said, what's wrong with you? Why are you so pale? I said, okay. So I took a few big breaths and I said, I almost passed out. She said, why? I said, this is what I did. I said no to Mediacorp.
Which I've never done before.
And my body just went into this whirlwind of like, what happened here?
Unfamiliarity.
So for the next 3 months, even though I was available, I kept practicing to say no.
You had to practice to say no.
Sounds weird to a lot of people, I'm sure. They're like, huh? How can it be like that? But that's how it was.
Because for 20 years plus, you've been wired to just show up anytime at their beck and call.
Yeah, I get a text or I get an email. Mostly text, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we'll show up wherever. And so in one day, I could be practicing PCK rehearsal from, let's say, 10 o'clock to 3 p.m. Then after 3 p.m., I go for 8-day shoot from 4 to 6. And after 6, I go for another read or another shoot somewhere else or an interview till 9 p.m. or 10 p.m. And then go to sleep and then just go around and around, you know.
And it was such an extreme leap of faith because it's almost like something to nothing. You just quit completely.
A lot of people were shocked.
Yeah.
They're like, huh?
What was the underlying motivation? Were there nights where you still debated and tried to convince yourself that what gave you that conviction to just pull the plug and say, right, I'm going to do it now?
So baby is born, right? It's 2013.
Your third child.
Yeah. My third child. 2014, I'm having dialogues with my wife and conversation with my wife. So now what can we do and all that? And then I said, let's also put it out there with my two other kids. I told them, hey, Papa is thinking of, stepping down from MediaCorp and all that and just doing a freelance. But that means we have to make sacrifices.
Yeah.
So my son asked, what sacrifices? So I said, well, for example, we can never travel business class anymore because we always travel business class everywhere we went. And he loves business class.
We would love that too.
Once he gets in there, we lose a child.
Because he's just immersed in the experience.
And then look at the screen and then call her. Excuse me, can I have some milk? And then he'll sit on there. And for the next 13, 14 hours, like we're going to UK, right? We'll never hear him, see him anymore.
Oh.
Until it's time to land. You ready? Yeah, ready. You know? So I said, we cannot do business class anymore. We thought for a second and then he said this. And I'll never forget till the day I die. He said, Dad. He said, Dad, if it means having more time with you, that is a no-brainer.
Wow.
So when your child says that, on one hand, you know that, you know, he's on your side in decision making. But on the other hand, you also know he's crying for time with you. In another word, he will say, yes, Dad, I'd like to have more time with you.
And how old was he when he said that?
13. So no regrets. I knew that we were going towards a good decision. Every decision has its pros and cons. Like being in MediaCorp, great time, great career, Lamborghini house and all that, great. But there was some bad stuff. Going to freelance, there'll be no more Lamborghini, no more big house. But the family time, the bonding and all that. You know, I went on family trips, but I also went on individual family member trips. So my son and I went to Bali and then we checked the hotel. I remember him saying, Dad, can I order room service? I said, yeah, go ahead. Just call. Want to have ice cream? He said, what?
He couldn't believe his ears.
Said, ice cream? But we haven't had dinner yet. I said, yeah, we can have it backwards if you want. We can? Then I said, Mom's not here. And then we ordered all kinds of rubbish. And I knew I was doing something right because we were in a theme park right in Bali, just the two of us, two boys, and we were running around, going upstairs and sliding and this, and on one particular step, we're going up, he suddenly stopped short and he turned around and the face was serious. He said, Dad, I said, oh no, what's happening now? I thought we were having a good time. And he said, Dad, thanks. This is really nice. Wow. And then my daughter, who was later, studying in the UK, she had her holidays. So I flew over and then got a car. And then we, for 21 days, we drove 8 countries,
wow,
8,000 kilometers, free and easy. So then we checked Airbnb or booking.com and say, ah, okay, this hotel looks nice. Let's check in there. And then we would just check in there and then walk around, eat, go museum, this. We did one thing, which was at every city, we would sit down with our guitars. And then we'll play Never Gonna Give You Up, Never Gonna Let You Down. So then after that, we montaged different countries with us singing that.
Oh.
Yeah, it was so nice. It was fun. My wife and I went to Bali also. She was, you know, yeah. It was my wife and my baby, yeah. So wow, it was very nice that I was able to catch up with them. I mean, simple things that people take for granted, right? Like, you know your children's favorite color and what they're into and all that. I had to learn that.
I love that You talk so much about the joy of being a father and a parent. And we all also know that parenting can really be one of life's greatest joys and also challenges.
Oh, yeah, man.
How has being a dad stretched you emotionally, mentally, and spiritually?
It's definitely stretched me because the world we live in now is totally different world when I was growing up, isn't it? We have the work culture, we have the cancel culture, we have, everybody is so sensitive now, hypersensitive. Comedians are now, or comics are very scared to say some jokes because we get trashed, you know, we get trolled. And I fear for my kids too because there's so many outside factors that affect them now more easily because of the phone, because of the social media. it's a good and bad thing. I mean, I'm on TikTok and Instagram and Facebook, and like anything is a double-edged sword, right? You can retrieve good stuff, good info and funny videos and make your day laugh. But there are some things there out there that are so, like, my mind cannot grasp,
yeah.
You know? And how do I protect my children? How do I guide them? And then I pray to God that, you know, whatever they get hit with or they get influenced by, that is only temporary.
Mm.
That one day they'll come back and hold my hand or my wife's hand and say, okay, we're back. We tried that thing and all. And I came to the time when, I think every generation goes through that. Because I can imagine when I told my parents I was joining the TV station, my mom actually said, huh, for what? To me, that for her was a disappointment. Because, you know, she wanted me to be a proper job.
And you were the only son.
I was the only son. But in my first year after getting my diploma, the TV station came in and said, you know, we'd like to get you to sign on. And back then, my wife, who was my girlfriend, said, you know, try it for 1-2 years. If it doesn't work out, you can go back to studies and continue that path. But that 1-2 years became 30 years.
Wow. Hey, by the way, your wife sounds like an amazing person.
She is very grounded. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so as a parent, I struggle. It's a huge challenge now. And I keep telling myself that my parents did the same too. They also had their challenges. And I like to think that, you know, I came out okay. You know, I didn't turn into some evil man. And I hope to be there for my kids every step of the way if they let me.
Mm.
You know, I don't like to talk down to them. I don't like to, and that could be a problem too, because they treat me more as a friend than as a father figure. But I'm always very scared. Yeah, that's the word. I fear so much. It's a nightmare come true if ever my connection with my kids gets cut because they said something or because I said something, and then done. No more communication. So I will never, as far as I can, I will never let that happen. You know, because I want to be there for them, whatever state they're in, whatever belief systems they're in. Because that's how I'm wired, you know. You're my flesh and blood.
Yeah.
In a similar fashion, we were talking about spirituality. I'm a Christian. I have a God. And we know that God loves me unconditionally. No matter what I've done, no matter what evil, sinful stuff I've done, you know, I could be a murderer, a criminal, or that, He still loves me. And that to me is the saving grace of my spirituality.
Wow.
That no matter what I go through, I can still kneel, go to a corner and pray to Him, cry to Him, because I know He'll be there.
Mm.
And in that sense, I want to be the same for my kids. That they know no matter what they've gone through, how bad it is, that I'll still be here.
Yeah. You know, Gurmeet, you also shared publicly also your support for your daughter. And how did this journey reshape your understanding of love, unconditional love, and perhaps also even letting go as parent?
Hmm. When it first came to the forefront and we found out what was happening, it was tough. Because my wife and I, like to think we are a bit conservative. We're not exactly that liberal. I have friends who are gays or lesbians and all that. And, you know, to each his own kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
But when it's your own flesh and blood, it's kind of hard to like, how did it happen? I didn't talk about all this. I didn't say, you know, go be a gay. I know. Mm. I didn't do that. No, we didn't promote it. We didn't encourage it. And yet it happened. So like, as parents, we start to think, where did we go wrong?
Mm.
But like I said, there is so much influence now from the outside world. Yeah. It's so hard, you know, short of caging my kids in the home and not letting them out, there's no way they will be not influenced by the factors outside. So we had trouble, my wife and I had trouble trying to navigate this whole environment, this new concept, this belief. But at the end of the day, we decided that, no, yes, we don't like the concept, we don't like the belief, but we still love you, our child. And as much as God believes in us and loves us, we want to do the same to you. How can we say we have a God that loves us because no matter what our sins, and then for us to say, oh, I don't love you anymore because you did it. How hypocritical is that? And I'm sad to say this, but there are some Christians who are like this. Or because you don't believe you don't follow the Bible system and all that, out of this house, you're not my child anymore. That's not what God tells us to do.
Yeah. So how do you reconcile that when you might not understand or even agree with, you know, their choices?
Hate the game, but don't hate the player. That's the only thing I can think of. Because if you truly, truly, truly love your child because it's your flesh and blood, then you truly, truly will accept them whenever, whatever, however.
Wow.
And you pray, you hope that one day we'll see eye to eye, that you'll come back to my senses, I call it. Because they have their own... I understand where they're coming from too, because they believe in that system so much that they think we are in the wrong system.
Mm.
And likewise, we think so much in the system, we think you're in the wrong system.
Mm.
So there are two thoughts now. Obviously, one is right. Right? But I cannot push down my belief in you, because that will be forcing you. God gave us free will. You know, when I became a Christian, when my parents found out, my wife said, I'll talk to your dad. And after the weekend on Monday, I'll let you know whether you're still our son, whether you have to move out. But you know, my sisters, what they did? And this is funny because my sisters became Christians first. But my parents blame me because I'm the eldest and the only son. My sisters went to my parents and said, hey, you know, yeah, he's a Christian. You're not happy with that and all that. So can you imagine? They also were thinking, what the heck is wrong with our son? We didn't ask him to become Christian. So it's a parallel universe. Yes. You see the parallel?
Yes.
And then my sisters told them and said, but if you want him to be in your religion, wouldn't you want him to be doing it willingly? Otherwise, he's always going to be angry. He won't believe in your God. And then he won't be happy at the temple. It's just pointless what?
Mm.
No point what?
Mm.
He's there, yes, but he don't really believe what? Because the whole thing is about belief what? Mm. And having faith in it. So it came Monday and my mother said, okay, you don't have to move out. So I almost became an orphan.
Mm.
So now I am in the same position as where my parents were when they found out I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
Except now it's not about Christianity. Yeah. It's about a different lifestyle, different sex orientation and all that. And quickly I think back about that time, how my parents turned around. If they had gone either in a different path, where would I be now, right? But no, we were, you know, I love my parents to death. I have, this says BBG. In Punjabi. This is Bapaji. So my mother passed in 2001, my father 2 years later, 2003. So 2021 was my mother's death anniversary, 20th death anniversary. And this says BBG means my dearest mother.
Wow.
And this is my dearest father.
Mm.
So even though we had different belief systems, that love for parent to a child was still there.
Yeah.
And that much I say I learned from my parents. So I'm exercising that same love to my children. Because they need love. In this world, there's so much hate. For a stupid reason, for some people's agenda, for some bloody ruler's greed, there is so much hate and war. Why should we continue that? Why can't we as family forget about who's right, who's wrong, but who needs love and who needs to be loved? That's more important. Love is more important than right.
Yeah. And how has your relationship been also with your daughter?
It's been great.
Yeah.
It's been, you know, it's beautiful. When that interview came out, she hadn't seen it yet. And I wanted her to know quickly because I didn't want her to hear from someone else's mouth. I said, hey, there was this interview called the Assembly and then this happened. And, you know, I said, I wish you were there to talk about it, but I spoke on your behalf and this is some of the things that I said.
Mm.
And she held my hand and she said, thank you.
Wow.
That was sweet of you. And I said, no, you watched the video first. Maybe I said something wrong. And then I sent her the video clip and then she watched it and then she replied me. She said, thank you. That was so sweet of you. That was very nice. So yeah, the connection is still there, right? And then we were going to have a gathering and she was worried that this is out there now and then, you know, maybe some of the relatives, the uncles and aunties may not be happy about it. I say, if they cannot be civilized and accept you for who you are when I can, then I'll ask them to leave the house. They can get out. They don't have to be like that in my house.
This is, yeah, no, Gurmit, thank you for sharing because I think it's such a courageous story there. It really talks a lot about, you know, even when we don't understand and we may not agree, but you just want to honor their individuality and also keep that connection with them because that is really the most important thing at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know, Gurmit, in your journey, you have really been through the highs of your career and fame and the depths of the personal challenges you faced.
Yeah.
And everything in between as well. What do you think is the biggest lesson life or God has taught you?
Well, for one, every day when I get up, I thank God for another day. I had a health scare in 2017, I think, where my wife calls me, I pick up the phone, and she says, "Where are you?" I said, "I don't know." I said, "What do you mean you don't know?" I said, "I'm in a room full of lockers." She said, "Yeah, you're in a gym, in a locker room. I'm outside next door, and we're supposed to go for a couple spa after this." "I have a gym membership." "Yes, you do." "You have a trainer." "I have a trainer." "Yes, you do." And I kept asking the same questions. They said, "Okay, come on out." So I came out. And she said, I kept asking the same 10 questions, like, "How did I get here? Why am I here? I have a gym membership. I have a trainer." And she said, "Okay, something is off. Cancel the spa." And she drove me to the hospital. And we quickly called a doctor friend who referred us to a urologist. Neurologist. I could pee.
That's the difference.
I could still pee, yes. And we did an MRI. And so what happened? What happened was that I was suffering from TGA, transient global amnesia. Hmm. I lost 24 hours of my memory. I can never retrieve it back. So when my sister, I was put in ICU and I was put in high dependency. And my sisters came to visit me, friends came to visit me, and they showed me a video of that visit. I don't remember that at all. But why I was in ICU was because I had shared with the doctor that sometimes I pass out because I got low blood pressure. And I said, "Okay, maybe you knock your head or something, you know, your heartbeat was erratic. Let's send you to a cardiologist." So I went there. And what they did was they did a tilt bed test. They put you in a bed, they strap you up so that when they tilt the bed up vertically, you don't slide off, you stay there. And then they make you stare at the white wall for 30 minutes. The idea is to get you so bored and subdued that at the 30th minute, they give you a liquid that would jumpstart your heart, like you're running for your life from 0 to 100 kilometers, like that, right? Now, 5% of the patients will pass out because it's too big a jump. Like,
yeah.
Heart, like,
the body can't take process it, right? That, yeah.
They pass out, the bed will then tilt back, the blood will come back to your brain, you wake up. So that's what happened to me. So apparently they put the thing there and I go, "Oh, you know, I pass out." So when I woke up, I saw a doctor's nurse and I said, "Oh, wow, I guess I passed out, like I'm one of the 5%. The doctor said, "Mr. Singh, not only did you pass out, your heart stopped for more than 30 seconds. You almost died here. We almost lost you. So we had to do a
resuscitate
CPR.
You.
Tomorrow in the sternum, you'll feel pain because we're pumping you." So that's why I was sent to ICU for 24 hours and then 48 hours high dependency to see what was going on. 4 days later, checking out, the neurologist and the cardiologist say, "We don't know what happened and why it happened. We can't find any traces." But So the only thing they can say is that maybe you were so stressed out, your brain shut down and you went to TGA. I say, "I'm stressed. Why was I stressed? It's like working too hard in the gym. I don't know." So every day now, when I wake up, I know there could be a possibility that a TGA might happen again. Or I might pass out and then my heart stops. So every day I finish the day, I say, "Thank you, God, for this day." When I wake up in the morning, I say, "Thank you, God, for another day." So that's why I say, I know I'm getting older, but I also know my days are numbered because of what I went through. I've always treasured life. I've never Like if I see a snail crossing the lane, I'll pick it up and help it transfer. If I see a cockroach, I don't kill it. I pick it up and throw it outside in the garden. I don't have to kill because life, it is life. It's so precious, right? Who am I to kill it? And now even so, my life, I feel that it's been compromised in the sense that now I never know when I'm going to go. I never knew. But now with the health scare, it's made it doubly and more in my face. So I am treasuring all this every minute.
Yeah. Yeah. Has that also changed your priorities and focus in life?
For sure. Yeah. So even more so to be nice, to be good, to love, to be real, to be there.
Yeah. And if you could go back to write a letter or give an advice to younger Gurmit, knowing everything that you know now, what would you say to young Gurmit?
It's funny you should ask that because I was thinking about it the last few years. I would tell Gurmit, and this is no disrespect to all the fans and the audiences out there who have so graciously supported my career.
Yeah.
But I would tell Gurmit, go be a system analyst. Don't let your family go through what they went through. My family were disadvantaged by my career. I mean, my kids had friends that they were not sure whether it was because they were really their friends or because they knew that, you know, they're the famous father. My family has lost their privacy too. And it's so unfair. So that doesn't mean there will be a Phuan Chu Kang. I think somebody else would have come along and played Phuan Chu Kang and done something else. You know, it's like this multiverse kind of thing, right? Like somebody else steps in and does something different. And I will be quietly, you know, doing programming in the office, having a family, going for holidays, nobody disturbing us, able to eat outside without having interference, able to go anywhere without having to time or to plan how we go there, what we go there, how we dress up, how do I act in front of people, how I cannot be who I really want to be because I'm in public eye. I cannot be sad. I'm not allowed to be sad in public, except now in the interview. But when I'm on stage, when I'm on out there walking around, people expect me to be, you know, the funny guy, the happy guy, bring something good into my world, and I will deliver for sure. No matter what. So when my parents passed away in 2001, a lot of people still didn't know that I was good mourning and all that. And they would ask me for jokes and all. So difficult. So difficult. And then when my father passed away in 2003, I had to take 2 weeks off from PCK filming. And I used the platform of Asian Television Awards because I got an award and Star Awards as well, Channel 8. And in my speech, I told everybody, you know, I'm not going to be that funny guy for some time. I hope you are okay with it because I really miss my parents. But of course, not everybody watched the show. So people still came to me and said, hey, tell me a joke. You know, why so sad? So when you become a public property like that, it's hard, really hard. But to put my family through that, not nice.
When you look back on your life now, what is something you are most proud of?
My wife and kids.
Yeah.
I like to think that was the one thing I did right in my life.
Well, Gurmit, I know I like to also ask my guests, like, if you could have a billboard down the streets of New York or anywhere in the world where everyone who walks past would see it, what would your billboard message say?
It's something I talked about my wife or having on my tombstone, if I ever have a tombstone.
Yeah.
And it would read, good husband, good father, good friend. That's it. That's all I need. Don't have to be the best father.
Just good father.
Wow. And it's almost like, okay, I'm going to rephrase and ask you because this is beautiful. Like, Gurmeet, if someone were to ask you now, who are you? What would your answer be?
Gurmeet is an introvert who's forced to be an extrovert and someone who has a lot of empathy and sympathy and some mush inside. And someone who often struggles to show his real self because he's scared. Because public demands a certain way he should be. Yeah. I'm not saying that when I'm happy and when I'm joking it's fake. No, it's real. It's just amplified.
Right.
All of us are like that. We all have different sides of ourselves. But in my line of work, it's become that, oh, we only even see one side. Only even see that side.
Mm.
So in a sense, I enjoy podcasts like this because I'm able to just sit down and talk and be myself, if I can say that. So in my inner circle, I'm very quiet. My pastor was the one who said very nicely, he said, you know what, Gurmeet, you know what you are? I said, no, you're not introvert, you're a pit extrovert.
Indeed, for a large part of your life, that's what you were.
Yeah.
You know, it's so beautiful just now when you shared that. That's all you want to essentially be remembered for. A good husband, good father, good friend.
Yeah.
And nothing about your career, your achievements.
Those are the superficials, the trimmings, you know, but the core of it all, you as a human being, you have connections to somebody, either as a father or as a mother or as a child or as a nephew or niece, employee, employer, human connections.
Mm.
And this is what makes the world go around.
Yeah.
Even when people say they like to be alone, I like to be alone too because I think in my line of work, I see so many people that actually treasure. I was hoping to get COVID and stay alone for 14 days, which I never got. Basket.
You didn't pray hard enough.
No, I didn't pray hard enough. I got COVID for 2 days only. But I enjoy my alone time. But I also know that when you are in a group of good company, you know, it doesn't have to be famous people or it doesn't have to be high-ranking people, just good-hearted company.
Mm.
And you will feel that and you will like, I want to stay here for a bit more.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is beautiful. That keeps the world go around. That keeps you sane.
Indeed. And, well, Gurmeet, thank you so much for sharing so openly, so vulnerably and
thank you
about your journey. Me. And if there's any one last message or reminder that you want to share with all of us who are listening and watching you now, what would that be?
I want to quote what Tom Hanks quoted from another quote that he saw. He said that, you know, he wished he knew that when he was going through the bad times, he wished he knew this quote. And the quote was, this too shall pass. So no matter what you're going through, bad times or even good times, this too shall pass. Nothing is permanent except you and your relationships. Those are permanent.
Gurmeet, thank you so much. And
thank you.
For those of us who want to continue following you on your journey, where can we find you on social media?
Oh, yeah, I'm on Instagram, on Facebook, and
Facebook, you're on Facebook, you are.
Yeah, I'm that old, yes.
Are you on TikTok?
TikTok as well, but not. Yeah. I'm more active on Instagram, and I've tied my Facebook account to my Instagram, so whatever I post there,
cross post
kind of thing.
Nice.
Yeah, still learning. And there's a show now on Channel 5. I encourage you to watch it. It's called I Can See Your Voice. It's hilarious. It's a game show. It's not a singing show, although it looks like a singing show, but it's a game show. And people win $10,000 and all that. But I had so much fun on it, 10 episodes of it, and no script. So it's fun.
Wow, that's where you thrive.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's really fun. I can see your voice.
Well, thank you, Gurmit, for sharing so much of your life with us, your journey, everything. And I'm so blessed just listening to you. So thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.